Hello and welcome to the newest episode of Memcast. This week we have got an episode focusing on how to manage the exacerbation of cystic fibrosis. So we're going to cover a few things this week. We've got a brief intro where we're going to talk a little bit about the genetics and the pathophysiology, but the bulk of this episode is going to be focused on what to do when a patient with cystic fibrosis presents to the acute take, how you investigate them and how you manage them. And we're very, very lucky this week to be joined by Dr. Flowers, who is a cystic fibrosis consultant in Oxford. Dr. Flowers, thank you very, very much for coming on this week.
Thank you.
We're very, very lucky to have you. So first things first, would you just be able to tell us a little bit about the basics in the genetics and the pathophysiology of cystic fibrosis?
Well, thanks very much, Tom. So I suppose cystic fibrosis, as many of you know, it's a genetic disorder. It's autosomal recessive disease, and it's caused by variants in the CFTR gene. CFTR stands for cystic fibrosis transmembrane conductance regulator gene, and it's an ion channel that's involved in the regulation of water and electrolytes on many of the epithelial surfaces in the body. So the upper and the lower airways, the GI tract, the pancreas, the biliary tree, the sweat glands and the reproductive system as well. So the consequence of an abnormal CFTR gene is abnormal CFTR protein, and the function of that protein is then impaired. So what happens is throughout the epithelial systems of the body, you get abnormal electrolyte transport, basically very thickened and dehydrated secretions that build up. So the consequence of that in the lungs is thick mucus that can cause inflammation and bronchiectasis. And that's really the main problem with the disease itself. It's the primary focus of most of our management, which is why most CF is cared for by respiratory physicians. The patients with CF have a bronchiectasis-like syndrome, chronic mucus production, recurrent infections, and that can progress to airway damage, respiratory failure. Outside of the chest as well, you can get liver disease. Most patients have pancreas disease, which is why they've got pancreatic insufficiency. You can also get problems in the GI tract, rhinosinusitis, and a variety of other complications
as well. So I think what you've highlighted that's crucial is that whilst the focus of CF, rightly so, is always on what happens in the lungs, this is actually a multi-system disorder. And when we see these patients, you do have to think about the other ways in which they can be affected, which I think leads me on to what do we do with these patients when they come into the emergency department? So it's not necessarily often, it might depend on where you work, but every now and then you'll go to clerk a patient. You know, the presenting history might be a very sort of typical run-of-the-mill or somebody that's got a worsening cough and a fever, and you look through the past medical history and it says cystic fibrosis. When that happens, it would be good to go through today. What do we do? It's the same when we're treating these kind of patients? And what changes? What do we have to think about extra when we're treating cystic fibrosis patients when they come into the emergency department?
So, I mean, I think, yeah, like you said, it's relatively rare for CF patients to turn up on the acute take. And the reason for that is that they generally have lifelong care from a specialist CF centre. Most of those will have, hotlines, mobile phones, and they'll be very well known to their team. So the majority of the time, these patients will have already kind of flagged up that they're unwell. Most of them will have an idea of how to manage their chests, normally with oral antibiotics. And all the CF centres also have mechanisms for either getting people in acutely to admit under their own services for IV antibiotics, or many patients can self-administer IV antibiotics at home, either through a peripheral line, or some may even have implanted vascular access devices like a Portacath. So often the patients that you will see on an acute take, maybe when their local CF centre may have no beds or no capacity to see them, maybe out of hours, maybe at the weekends or over holidays where there's slightly less capacity. Or it may be people that don't engage so well with their CF centres for a variety of reasons. So it's relatively rare, but once these patients turn up, they're often quite complex. They're quite young. They will often be on a variety of unfamiliar medications, and the management of their exacerbation may be slightly different. So, I mean, the first way to think about it maybe is what is an exacerbation? And that's actually not really well defined. But I think, you know, most patients where they have an acute cough or worsening of their sputum associated with breathlessness, maybe fever, sometimes hemoptysis or chest pain. And that's persisting long enough for either the patient or the doctors to think that a change in treatment is required. A fall in lung function isn't necessary to define an exacerbation, although most CF doctors would say that if you have a fall in your FEV1 by about 10% from your baseline, that would probably be a trigger to think about some type of treatment. And a lot of patients have home spirometry now as well, so can monitor. So they may even know what their lung function has been doing. So, you know, what are you going to want to do? Well, I mean, you want to find out a little bit more about them. They could normally give you a history of say, well, look, you know, I've been coughing more sputum, so thick green or yellow sputum for a couple of weeks. I've taken some oral antibiotics, a 2-week course, and I'm no better. And now they're turning up with more breathlessness, more sputum, and they may be more unwell. Most of the time, I think if a patient with cystic fibrosis turns up and has those symptoms, you can be fairly sure that it's a cystic fibrosis exacerbation. Occasionally you have to be careful because one of the other complications that people with CF can get is pneumothorax. So if they've got a new oxygen requirement, particularly with any pleuritic chest pain, you should be thinking about pneumothorax and getting a chest x-ray. Thinking about the chest x-ray as part of your investigations, that may not necessarily show any acute changes. There'll probably be some bronchiectasis, there'll probably be signs of mucoid impaction, but a stable chest x-ray without any new consolidation or new features, again, doesn't necessarily mean that the patient isn't having an exacerbation. I think in the context of someone with CF, new consolidation or new pneumonia would actually be quite a worrying sign for a more severe exacerbation. So when you're thinking about, you know, what you want to do, you then, you know, you have a chat with them, you find out their story, you probably want to examine them. Again, most patients may have wet crackles consistent with sputum, but they may also have a clear chest. And again, a clear chest would not necessarily on its own lead you away from making the diagnosis of an exacerbation. Patients can be very poorly and have pretty normal physical examination signs. So again, it's really on history. Any new oxygen requirement would be concerning and should be treated in the same way as any other patient. But if a patient has particularly severe disease, you might need to think about some additional investigations like blood gases, because more severe patients with very low FEV1s may be at risk of hypercapnic respiratory failure.
Just as a quick question about that, you've talked a little bit about, I guess, the history and examination of these patients, and a lot of the features are similar to what we would expect from a patient coming in with a chest infection or a CAP. I guess one of the things you have mentioned that's a little bit different is these patients will have often had some treatment themselves, maybe from rescue packs or whatever they've got from home. Once we've done our examination, we've taken our history and we're thinking, you know, whether their chest's clear or crackly, you know, they're describing thicker sputum and they feel more unwell, and we want to send off our initial raft of tests. Is there anything in addition that we should be sending that we might not send in a normal pneumonia patient, or is it pretty much just the usual?
Yeah, so I think where it differs from other, so let's say exacerbations of other chronic lung diseases like COPD, most of the time when you're dealing with a cystic fibrosis exacerbation, you will be thinking about prescribing antibiotics. Like you mentioned investigations, you might send your usual CRP, but a normal CRP, again, would not point you away from prescribing antibiotics. Many of the patients with cystic fibrosis can have intense endobronchial suppuration, lots of mucus with multiple bacteria infecting their airways, and can have relatively normal CRP values. So I wouldn't use a normal CRP to alter your management as well. A very high one would probably be an indicator of a more severe exacerbation. So again, maybe unlike other exacerbations of chronic airways diseases, I'd be sending off sputum for culture. In some conditions, that sputum for culture may not necessarily alter your management, but in cystic fibrosis, often it does. It's very helpful to sample patients' sputum regularly and work out what bacteria they're growing. You may also want to send off AFB cultures as well, because they can be affected by non-tuberculous mycobacterial infection. Those really are more longer-term issues and less a problem for you in the acute medical unit or the ED.
Obviously, you're mentioning that the sputum cultures might not be such a problem because those results are going to come back a little bit later and help to tailor treatment further down the line. But empirical treatment in cystic fibrosis patients, for me, feels like something that's going to be a bit more difficult, because some of these patients, like you say, will have had antibiotics at home. may have had previous sputum cultures where they've grown other bugs. Some of them take regular nebulized antibiotics. And you can sometimes be looking at these patients' medications going, do I continue what they've been having at home? Do I add in something extra? Do I prescribe something completely different? How do you approach giving the antibiotics in these patients?
So I think often, so if you've got to the point where you've seen this patient and gone, right, you know, they're ill, they're going to need admission, they're going to need antibiotics. It's a complicated area. And so the first thing I probably do to help that is, number one, the patient might already have a rough idea of what they have. So if there's someone who has exacerbations regularly, they may recall what they had from their previous admission. If their exacerbations happen in, you know, locally to you and you can see their electronic patient record, simply looking back and finding out what they had during their last admission and whether it worked for them would be quite helpful. But if you didn't have access to that information locally, then I would encourage everyone to be getting in contact with the patient's local CF centre. If you're thinking that you didn't have that information, you wanted to think about empirical treatments, and it's useful to know a little bit about the microbiology of CF lung infection. So patients can get chronic airway infection from a variety of bacteria. So things like Haemophilus influenzae, or Staphylococcus aureus. But as the disease tends to get more severe, patients typically become chronically infected with Pseudomonas aeruginosa, and that is a bit more challenging to treat. Patients can also sometimes get chronic airway infection from other unusual bacteria that you may not come across in regular practice, such as Acromobacter or Burkholderia, or some of the non-tuberculous mycobacteria, including Mycobacterium abscessus. If you were stuck and you didn't know, you'd probably want to try and tailor some of your treatments for those organisms. So something that covers Haemophilus influenzae and Staph aureus would be something like Co-amoxiclav, for instance. If you wanted to cover Pseudomonas aeruginosa, then you'd be thinking about antipseudomonal penicillins. So the ones commonly prescribed are ceftazidime or piperacillin tazobactam, meropenem. And most CF centres as well, in combination with those drugs, would prescribe an aminoglycoside. The common one is tobramycin. So a very common combination would be ceftazidime and tobramycin. So I would say a word of caution when you're prescribing some of these antibiotics is patients with cystic fibrosis metabolise drugs quite differently to people without cystic fibrosis. And therefore, the doses of drugs that you might prescribe are often higher, more frequent. And they might be doses that are not seen in the BNF, for instance. So it is usually worthwhile speaking to the CF centre, because they can direct you to what to prescribe. The other option is oral ciprofloxacin. Many patients may already have had that in the community if they've got Pseudomonas aeruginosa as well. Most of the time, if patients needing admission for an exacerbation, we'd be thinking about intravenous antibiotic therapy.
Got you. And how much thought or concern do we need to have for sort of viral and fungal infections? Is that common, or is that something you just sort of investigate for occasionally, or for everybody? How do you screen for that regularly?
Yeah, it's a really good question. And the honest answer is that not enough is known about the different roles of these various organisms in an exacerbation. A lot of the focus is on bacteria because of the nature of cystic fibrosis. There's no doubt that viral infection can trigger an exacerbation, and we see that a lot. Whether you go hunting for them is one thing, because I suppose it's nice to know from an infection control point of view, or if you have something that you have a specific therapies for, so things like COVID or influenza, you might wish to treat them. But again, if you find a virus and a patient turns up with cystic fibrosis and they're unwell with thick sputum, you're always going to think about prescribing antibiotics anyway, because you know that they have chronic airway infection, and you know that it's likely that they probably be at risk of developing complications with secondary bacterial exacerbation as well. So I wouldn't be hunting for viruses too much, because it's unlikely that they change our management that much. You mentioned about fungal diseases. I mean, that's probably another podcast on its own. But it's worthwhile just thinking about some of the other mimics of cystic fibrosis exacerbations. And one of them that your listeners might be familiar with is something called ABPA, allergic bronchopulmonary aspergillosis, which is an overexuberant allergic reaction to Aspergillus fumigatus or other fungal organisms. And it can present in a very similar fashion to cystic fibrosis exacerbations with sputum, cough and wheeze. And that might be suggested in a patient who's not responding to antibiotic therapies, and particularly ones who might have high peripheral blood eosinophil counts, or if you can send it off in your labs, they might have total IgE levels. It's an allergic-driven disease. So that's something that you might be thinking about a couple of days down the line if a patient isn't particularly responding to treatment, thinking about, have we got the primary diagnosis right and could there be an alternative explanation for this? But that's something that your respiratory teams or cystic fibrosis teams would be able to help out with.
It's interesting you mentioned that, like you say, these patients may present with wheeze as well, because I wanted to ask how often, if at all, in addition to the antibiotic therapy, are we looking at other therapies like bronchodilators or steroids? Do they have a role in these exacerbations?
Yes. So I think if you listen to a patient's chest and they're wheezy, I think it's always worthwhile prescribing them bronchodilators in standard fashion as you would do for other airways diseases like asthma or COPD. The question about steroids, I think there's a push away now from prescribing steroids for a variety of acute, you know, exacerbations of respiratory illnesses unless you've got good evidence for eosinophilic inflammation. So I think the evidence for it in COPD is changing, and I think that's reflected in cystic fibrosis as well, in that they don't form a standard part of care. But if a patient has a simultaneous diagnosis of asthma, then I would prescribe them. I think if the patient reports that when they get an exacerbation, they require steroids or respond very quickly to steroids, then I would think about prescribing them. And sometimes you might think about them if the patient isn't responding after a few days of treatment as well, because occasionally some patients do. But most CF physicians now avoid prescribing steroids unless you've got a really good reason that the patient may respond to them, like asthma or ABPA, or the patient reports a good response to treatment in the past.
I guess we've talked a lot about the various treatments we can offer and had a very strong encouragement that we do try and speak to the cystic fibrosis respiratory teams that we can to get as much advice as we can. It seems like a lot of these patients are going to be very unwell, and most of them probably will need to come in if they've got to this stage. Are there any patients in this situation that you would be happy to discharge? What kind of things would you be looking for in those patients? Or would you, for the most part, encourage hanging fire and keeping hold of these people until you've managed to speak to a specialist team?
Again, there's not a huge amount of evidence to guide this, but there's no strict discharge criteria like there might be for things like asthma. And I think often if a patient with cystic fibrosis has felt unwell enough to attend their emergency department or been sent in by someone, that's usually a sign that that treatment probably could not be managed safely in the community. If you're treating adult patients, they will have lived with their condition for at least 17 years and typically more than that. So we'll be quite accustomed to managing exacerbations. Most patients with cystic fibrosis will have exacerbations from time to time, and so we'll have a sense of what is normal for them and what they may be able to manage at home. And so I think a sign that a patient is presenting acutely is either because they've been told to go to hospital or they felt ill enough to go to hospital. So I would generally recommend getting these patients in, observing them, starting them on some therapies, and then speaking to their local services. But I think if I was a doctor seeing a patient in an ED or an acute medical unit with cystic fibrosis, I would probably be thinking about speaking to either respiratory or a CF service before I was thinking about sending them home.
We've talked a bit about examining patients, taking a history. We've talked about investigations and that initial management as well. From your point of view, having gone through all of that, are there any key sort of take-home messages that you'd want people to have for this sort of acute episode of managing the cystic fibrosis exacerbation? Any things you want to make sure people hold on to so that they know what to do when they come across these situations?
Yeah, so I think some of the take-home messages are is that listen to the patient and take a good history, because I think normally they will give you all the information that you need to know to be able to make treatment decisions, management decisions. I would have a very low threshold for speaking to either your respiratory teams or your cystic fibrosis teams locally, because again, they will give you that information. And I would also recognise that some of your usual assessments that you might do, for instance, if a CRP is low, you may not consider prescribing antibiotics, or if a chest X-ray is clear, again, that might steer you away. There are other factors in this chronic and complex lung disease that need more specialised treatments. And so again, I would take all of that information into context for making specific management decisions. And if in doubt, I would think just ask. Most respiratory teams or cystic fibrosis teams will know their patients very, very well and will be very happy to provide advice. So that's my take, Em, is that I would speak to your teams early.
Sounds good. This is something that we could easily chat for a very long time about. We've not talked about all the different kinds of complications or the extra pulmonary manifestations. There's all of the long-term management as well. And I'm banking on being able to call you again at some point and pick your brains on those things in the future. But it's been very, very good to be able to go through what we do when we see these patients on the take, because I think for a lot of people, that's the most common interaction they're going to have with cystic fibrosis patients. And just being able to have a little bit of confidence in that initial management hopefully will make things a little bit easier for everyone going forward. So thank you very, very much, Will, for talking us through that.
You're welcome.
So if you haven't seen them already, everybody, please do have a look at the Instagram and the X pages for the MCQ questions. And we will have another episode out next Friday as well. Thank you very much.